Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Journalist and author Charles Blow is making his first appearance on our program today to talk about his book that was released just last month, Fire Shut Up In My Bones, and what it's been like for him to share his own life with the world, as well as, of course, what has made him the man that he is today. Charles, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Well, happy to be here.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. You know, I was telling you before we went live here, you know, you're one of these individuals that we've gotten to read and, of course, been able to hear give commentaries on various events that are going on around the world. What has it been like for you now, Charles, to have the shoe on the other foot? And instead of us reading about your columns, what has it been like for you to be sharing your life with the world?
Well, in a way, it's, you know, it's kind of an odd feeling because, you know, you turn the glove inside out, you know,
yeah.
And it's you and you're the subject and you see. You know, you're on Tinder hooks all the time, worrying about how people will receive it,
yeah.
Because it's very personal, and you get to see how journalism works as people interview you about the book or read or report on the book.
Right.
Some of it not completely understanding it, taking things out of context, and you see how very important it is to get complete context as a writer, as a journalist. I mean, I think maybe every journalist should have the experience of being written about. but I think it's also very valuable to me because, you know, it adds credibility to me as a commentator on other people,
right.
On politicians, on other personalities, because I have also allowed myself to be open and vulnerable, and so I'm not asking something of my subjects that I have not done myself.
Exactly. I think that's a really good point. So, Charles, take us into the timeline. As I said, the book was released last month in September for those joining us live. You know, how long had you known that this was a story that you wanted to tell?
You know, I didn't start writing this book thinking that I was writing a book.
Okay.
So there was no declarative moment where I said, "Oh, I want to tell the story of my life." And for even while I was writing it, I wasn't completely sure that I wanted to disclose so much about my life. You know, proper Southern boy, I am very private, and you should appear in the newspaper twice: once when you're born and once when you die. You know, that sort of
thing. Right.
But, you know, I started writing, like, just kind of personal essays from my life, just kind of funny little anecdotal things that I thought I might be able to sell to magazines, and they would run as, like, a day in the life or kind of features. And I wrote, never quite got around to trying to pitch any of these things to magazines. And then in 2009, two little boys both killed themselves. They were both 11 years old. They killed themselves 10 days apart from each other. They both hanged themselves. And they had both been the subject of tremendous amount of homophobic bullying. And I thought, you know, this can't be. It's not real life. How is this even happening? There's so much sorrow in the world that these boys thought that there was no other way out. And I thought, you know, this is part of this anyway, is my story. This idea of being bullied, homophobic taunts, thinking at a very young age that suicide is your only way out,
right.
And thinking of doing it. And I know that little children don't always have language to express that, and even when they take their lives, unfortunately, they don't always even leave suicide notes. You don't even know the full story of how they felt and how painful it was. And I said to myself, well, the one thing that I have, my gift in the world, is language.
Yeah.
And I can write this story. And so in that moment, I realized that I was actually writing a book and not just essays.
Yeah. And that, I'm so glad you shared that. I think that is a powerful thing. I think for all of us to understand, Charles, about our lives and the importance of the events that happen. And sometimes, and when you were just telling the story, and I did not know that that was part of the impetus for, you know, for you making the decision. But one of the things I made a note of in the book that you said, and as someone who on the radio here in Mississippi, we all know about gardening and being able to take care of things on the outside. You said this, and I thought this was really interesting just about life in general. Gardening mm-hmm. taught me things I didn't even know I was learning, lessons about patience and caretaking, but most important about disturbance as a condition of growth, that solid ground had to be plowed up for new seeds to take root. So do you think that is just indicative of who we are, that sometimes it takes events in life to really kind of shake us up and to make us make decisions like that?
Oh, absolutely. That's a life lesson. I mean, and hopefully people will read the book with an open heart and an open mind to taking in universal lessons, that some of these are specific to things that are happening in my life. But because I am human, and because you are human, as Maya Angelou said, nothing you do can be foreign to me.
Exactly.
Right? So the idea that this is happening specifically to this little boy, yes. But also these are just universal lessons.
Right. Exactly. And we all know how we can learn from those. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live, already off to a great start today with our guest today. Charles M. Blow is making his first appearance on our show. You guys have gotten to know him as a columnist, not only for the New York Times, but also as an individual who definitely gives his thoughts on things that are going on in the world. His new book released last month is called Fire Shut Up in My Bones. We're talking to him not only about what inspired him to write the book, but what it's been like for him to share his own journey with all of us. You know, the other thing that really struck me, and I have to say I was raised most of my life and lived most of my life, Charles, in Mississippi. And, you know, I've always tell people I was, you know, raised and born in just the right time in 1975, where I've never seen outright racism in my life. But I was reading about your own experiences and what it was like for you when it came to interacting with whites in the book. And you said something, the only reason why I wanted to bring it up, because it goes to the power of words that you're still using today. In talking about the N-word, you said this, and I love the wording of this. This is why I wanted to talk to you about it. I didn't realize the word, talking again about the N-word, was a perfect little weapon when it was in the wrong mouth, a missile that could be launched from the back of a passing truck by one boy at another. I didn't realize how well it captured and protected loathing and hostility. And I thought about that, you know, that a lot of times we don't understand and appreciate the power of words, especially in the world we live in today with social media, where people feel like they can say and write anything. Of course, we know there's so much cyberbullying that's going on out there. But just in our day-to-day interactions, was that part of what helped you to appreciate the power that words had?
I mean, I think that in a way, I think language in general was very powerful for me. And you growing up in Mississippi, you know this well, as well, you know, this kind of Southern storytelling is just rapturous.
Right.
And you know, we take our time with a story, and we can tell one story for 30 minutes. And all of that was very powerful for me.
Yeah.
Biblical language, as you can tell by the book, both from the title and also, like, there are 100 biblical references in this book that very few people are even picking up on, because I am so enraptured by language in the biblical language, and I don't know who to quote, you know, kind of to attribute that to, whether to be the original authors of the books of the Bible or King James's translators of the Bible. But anyway, someone did a beautiful job in some of these passages, and so I'm in awe of that and how and just the overall power of stories in general and how they help to shape conversation and shape history. And also the power of words depending on the intent behind them. And in particular, in the case that you just pointed out, if there's malice involved in the word, where I had always used that word as a word, as a kind of in camaraderie with friends, or in a loving term, actually, with family, and how the very meaning of it could be flipped depending on the intent of the person using it.
Exactly. So is that why you feel like today, we get to know you because of words, because of your use of words and what you share with us, not only in print, Charles, but also, you know, when you're making appearances, is that why you feel such a responsibility when it comes to using words today?
I don't know if that is the totality of what, you know, kind of a responsibility, as much as I understand that they can be powerful, and if you can articulate yourself well, if you can capture something in the beauty of language, then it makes it even more powerful. The point itself can be powerful, but language can up the ante and magnify the power of the point.
Yeah.
And so I try my best to figure out ways to make that happen.
And that is, again, I think one of the things we see in the book. You know, you mentioned the biblical references, including the title, Charles. You know, faith is definitely a big part of this, and your relationship with God and understanding what that was, I think, is another big part of this. One of the funny parts, I don't know if it's meant to be funny, but it was, when you were baptized, you know.
It is funny.
Yeah,
you can say it.
Yeah, and you were like, you know, when you were baptized, there was no angels, you know, there was nothing miraculous that, you know, that happened, you know, when you came up out of the water. You know, there was that experience. And then, of course, you're realizing, you know, the power of prayer, I think, at a young age was another powerful thing. You know, when you had petitioned God for someone and, you know, the next day she seemed to be better and you realized, you know, oh, you know, there's really a power in this. You know, talk about how that really, because, you know, and I will say this too, and I'm talking around mm-hmm. things for those who haven't read it, so, and we'll mm-hmm. tell them later how they can get it. But you,
sure.
even later on, you realize that, you know, there was not only the power in it, but you almost seemed to feel a distance, you know, as your life went on. You know, talk to us about that.
The book is its use with spirituality, right?
Yeah.
And which is the umbrella, and that religion is one part of the spiritual realm in which the book dwells. But it also takes into account all of the spiritual elements that surrounded me when I was a kid, including superstitions and all sorts of things, but that people believe that there was more than what they saw.
Right.
And even from a young age, you know, as I describe, you know, that, you know, children see God every day, they just don't call it that. That we experience what we feel is a spiritual realm, and that is apart from kind of organized religion and apart from our books. Whatever religion we may have and whatever book we may follow, and that, you know, I came to believe more that it was, a, you know, kind of love and nature and all things beautiful and whole in the world was what this thing was for me. And even today, you know, people ask me about religion, and I say, you know, they say, well, what are you? I say, unresolved. You know?
Right.
Because it, you know, I don't feel like I have to have an absolute answer to that question to exist and to feel and to be continually feeling my way.
Right. Exactly. I think that is the thing. And so to share that, though, with someone, that is not always an easy thing, as you know. I mean, people say the two things you really should not talk too much about are, you know, are politics and religion, but do you believe, Charles, you would be able to be the person you are today if you had not had to go through that understanding of faith and also spirituality?
You know, that's almost an impossible question to answer. I mean, there's no way for me to be who I am without having my particular experiences. I don't know
mm-hmm.
who, you know, the person who didn't have those experiences would be a different person. But you know, particularly in literature, I don't think you can get away from feelings and spirituality, and these kind of very central questions to who a person is and how they develop. I don't think you can skirt those in, particularly a memoir. I mean, if you were writing a novel, you could obviously get around it.
Right.
But a memoirist writing about growing up in the church can't not write about religion.
Exactly. Exactly, and I think that because it's a part of who you are, and I think a part
yeah.
of the makeup, so I can definitely understand that. Again, everyone, Charles M. Blow is our guest, and we're talking about his book, Fire Shut Up in My Bones. We'll be telling you here in just a moment how you can get it for yourself. Last thing I wanted to mention, Charles, before we let our listeners know how they can get the book if they don't already have it,
mm-hmm.
is about growing into your own, because now you are one of these people that individuals can look at, have respect for, and say to themselves, you know what, if Charles can go through what he has gone through, if he can overcome what he has overcome, then definitely there is hope for me. Is that part of the residual effects of your sharing your story?
I mean, I hope that is what people come away with. I mean, it is a story of resilience and reinvention and and finding inner strength and also inner peace.
Right.
And hopefully that story comes through, because that is the bigger story. That is the universal story.
Exactly.
And that is what we all as humans, frail as we are, weak as we are at some times, we all keep stumbling forward towards wanting to be self-realized and be the person that we were always meant to be.
Exactly. And the reason I say that is because I think there are people who may have grown up in similar situations or circumstances and may have given up or thought that because I come from here, I can't be this. Or because
right.
I didn't experience this, or there's no way I could do this. But I think your story really shows that it's not so much about where you are. It really is about, you know, what you choose to believe about yourself and what
right.
you
and
choose
it,
to believe
not,
about life.
And it's not how other people conceive who you are. It's about who you conceive who you are.
Exactly.
Right. You know, you can – sometimes I speak to kids and I always say some people may start out with more than you. But no one has more hours in the day than you.
Right.
Right. I have had to compensate my entire life. I've had to read more now than other people have to read now because I'm catching up on the classics that we weren't assigned in school because we were in a small country school.
Right.
I have to do more, but no one can outwork me. And I always believe that. And I lean on that.
Well, I think that's the thing. And I think is that belief, too, Charles, that is so important, believing in yourself and believing in what's possible. I think and never letting go of that, regardless of what may come. I think that is the other great thing about it. Charles and Blow, again, everyone, has been our guest. Charles, thank you so much for taking out the time today to be with us. How can our listeners stay in contact with you as well as get the book for themselves?
Oh, well, I'm on every social media platform, Charles M. Blow, at whatever, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, just Charles M. Blow. And the book is available everywhere, all of the in stores as well as on major online book retailing sites.
All right. It's a number one bestseller on Amazon.com. Definitely a book you want to add to your reading list, either, of course, as I do in print, but also, of course, for you Kindle readers to be able to get it as well. And CharlesMBlow.com is a website. You guys can stay connected with them there as well. Charles, it really has been a pleasure, man, and look forward to staying connected with you.
Thank you.
Hey, you're more than welcome. And we thank all of you for tuning in to another edition of Conversations Live. And if you guys came in late and missed part of the conversation with Charles, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you guys can catch the podcast of this conversation just about 5 minutes after we go off the air. All you have to do is go to our radio website at conversationsliveradio.com. Or we've already tagged Charles on Facebook and Twitter. You guys can find it there at facebook.com/CyrusWeb or twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free and even share with your friends using the social media buttons you'll find there. Again, the book is called Fire Shut Up In My Bones. It's a number one bestseller on Amazon.com, which is our partner here. So make sure you guys get it there or wherever you get your books online. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music and, of course, a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.